Several people saw him. Everybody was talking about him, but no one understood his gestures. Yet the most striking similarity with American reports of MIBs emerged at the end of the interview, when Li Jingyang stated that the man in black was walking in a mechanical motion. He spoke, but without moving his mouth, and he disappeared suddenly as he turned a corner. When the journalist asked him if he could have been a normal person, Jingyang responded, "It's possible, but I swear that everything that I've told you is true." The second MIB report took place in Gansu province on July 29, 1974. Zhang Zi, a student at the Construction Workers Polytechnic at Lanzhou, kept the story of the luminous black man to himself until he began reading about UFOs in the Kuro journals few years ago. He then finally sent an account of his encounter to ace ufologist Shibo, who included it in his book. At the time, Zhang Zi was a member of a workers' brigade operating in Tengkli Desert in China's northern Gansu province. On the evening of July 29, 1974, wrote Zhang Zi, "I was going to eat at the restaurant reserved for the young personnel from the city on duty in the fields. As I walked around a rice field, I suddenly spotted a man all black, some 30 feet in front of me. He seemed tall and robust, with a height of about 5.9 feet. I couldn't discern his facial features, since it was very dark, yet the black man was plainly visible in the darkness because his whole body was faintly luminous. Thinking at first that the black man had to be a peasant which had come to inspect the irrigation system, Zhang Zi shouted and asked him to identify himself. The MIB remained silent and motionless and then began to glow more brightly, disappearing suddenly between the tall grass. The student looked at him, but couldn't find a trace of the mysterious visitor. Although he didn't say a word about it, he heard that 2 days later, at precisely the same spot, the chief of our brigade encountered a faintly luminous black man. Only after reading an article about MIBs in the USA in the fourth issue of China's Journal for UFO Research, did Zhang Zi finally decide to report his adventure. In 1981, Shibo received a letter from the city of Chongqing, in Sichuan province, which contained a story of a CE3 with a man with a big head, dressed in a space suit like a metallic coverall. The incident had taken place 10 years earlier, but the witness, an old peasant named Zhang Rongchenge, had died in 1972. Shibo requested further information from his correspondent, receiving eventually a more complete account from the old man's grandson, Zhang Quangxiu. In the second letter, the grandson related that towards the end of August, 1971, his grandfather had arrived one day very upset to his house at lunchtime, telling his family and neighbors that, "I saw today a man with a big head." As it turned out, after working in the fields, Rongcheng was returning home as he was hungry, when he saw an odd man on the road walking towards him. The man was robust and otherwise normal, except for his huge head, which was about 3 times the size of a normal human head. He was unable to distinguish his facial features, however, since the head was covered by a helmet, the man was wearing a one-piece suit covering his entire body from the neck to the feet. The man didn't seem to walk in a very flexible manner, he was faster than us. The elderly Rongcheng asked the figure to identify himself and state what he wanted, but as the stranger remained silent and motionless, the peasant was overcome by fear and ran away. A few seconds later he turned his head to see him one more time, but he had already vanished. Quangxiu's account adds that when his grandfather reached the village, he asked some youngsters to look for the stranger in the fields, but they could find no one. Afterwards, the old man was in a state of constant fear. His health deteriorated, and he died a few months later, in January of 1972. Shibo concluded that this CE3 was too controversial to be published in Kuro's journal, yet he believed that the event is true and the man with a big head could have been a space robot, or a MIB. A phantom car and protection. You want to know how to protect yourself from the MIB? If you were attacked by a vampire, you'd carry some garlic, a werewolf, a silver bullet. Frank Strange is, as his own approach, In addition to being a popular Christian evangelist, Reverend Frank E. Strangers is a longtime UFO investigator and director of the National Investigations Committee on UFOs. Because of his bold attitude on the subject of extraterrestrials, and the fact that he claims to have met a space being named Valthor in the Pentagon, Reverend Strangers has come under continued attack from the Men in Black, and other Luciferian-oriented silence groups who have tried to keep such matters hush-hush. His life has been put in severe danger on many occasions. Just recently, for example, he was sent to the hospital after being pushed off the road by a phantom car. In this story, Reverend Stranges tells about this incident, as well as his special ring of fire blessing, which he has devised, so that others may shield themselves from negative forces at work in the cosmos. Notice, the information found herein has originated from an unimpeachable intelligence source in time and space. The reader maintains the option to either accept or reject its contents. Hash, on the 11th of April, a few years back, Dr. and Mrs. Frank E. Stranges were driving on Boulder Highway, returning from Hoover Dam, when all hell cut loose without warning. The weather was clear, the sun was brightly shining, and the highway was uncluttered when, without warning, a phantom car cut directly in front of our car, causing a series of events that almost promoted us both from this planet. Our car swerved to avoid hitting the phantom car, blowing a front tire or being struck from behind by another vehicle, thus sending us spinning into the dirt meridian separating the oncoming traffic from that which we were traveling. According to the Nevada Highway Patrol accident report, the phantom car was also viewed by witnesses who claim that the car was nowhere to be seen following the impact. Dr. Stranges had no feeling from his neck down. When the emergency vehicles arrived on the scene, they carefully removed Dr. Stranges from his car, under the watchful eyes of a deeply concerned wife, who sat in the front seat of the ambulance, continuously looking over her shoulder and wondering at the fate of her injured husband. Upon arrival at the hospital, they were both taken to the emergency room. Mrs. Stranges suffered injuries in her neck as well as to her right wrist. Dr. Stranges was taken to an isolated area where the resident doctor, following a quick examination, instructed that X-rays be taken immediately. The nurse administered a shot to diminish his pain, while he was being prepared for the X-ray room. The long journey through the hospital corridors seemed endless as he lay helplessly watching the ceiling lights dash by. He was wheeled into the X-ray facility when a voice rang out from the corridor requesting that the three men come out to the corridor immediately. This is when it happened. From his right eye, Dr. Stranges saw a lone, uniformed figure approaching the stretcher upon which he was still lying. Commander Valthor simply stated, "Frank, please lie still. Do not move." His head was still taped down to the steel stretcher upon which he had been placed at the scene of the accident. Commander Thor then said, "Do not worry, do not speak, everything will be all right." Commander Thor then placed both his hands over the top of Dr. Strange's head, and began to pray. Within seconds, Dr. Strange's felt what he described as warm water passing from the top of his head to the very soles of his feet. All pain was gone. When the technicians had returned to the X-ray room, Commander Thor was gone. They proceeded to X-ray Dr. Stranges from head to toe. Following this, he was quickly returned to the emergency room for further examination and evaluation for treatment. Dr. Stranges was then subjected to a host of questions by the medical doctors, because he, 1, had no pain anywhere in his body, 2, there were no marks or bruises on his body, 3, he was sitting up, ready to get dressed and leave the hospital under his own power. Result: the car suffered over $1,500 damage, and both Dr. and Mrs. Stranges are alive and well. A thanks be to the provision made by Almighty God by assigning His ministering angels to assist and help in the hour of deepest need. At this writing, they are both receiving minimal care from their family doctor in the city of Van Nuys. As a result of the above, I, Dr. Frank E. Stranges, present to you, for the very first time, a topic that will indeed be a challenge to all of our members of friends and associates worldwide. On the following pages, I am presenting the secret of the doctrine of the Ring of Fire. You will read for the first time certain truths that, if properly applied, can alter your life. Please remember that this ceremony of which you will read is also practiced by those from other spheres before they set foot upon this planet. Do not be at all surprised if you find yourself motivated to travel to Van Nuys, California, in order to observe and take part in this important ceremony that will prepare you to meet the future head-on. Special warning: now, please prepare yourself. Do not lay this report aside until you have completely digested the entire report. Do not allow anything or anyone to interrupt you in any way, shape or form. Disconnect your phone, if necessary, and then, read on. The Ring of Fire. For the first time, you are being informed, in this writing, of a major segment of divine order that was established before the very foundations of this planet were laid. You are about to read powerful words that are absolute in all respects. The mystery of the Ring of Fire will become a vital part of your life, whether you reside within the United States or abroad. The Ring of Fire is: A. Essential. B. Necessary. C. Important. D. The only way that you will survive on this planet without being snuffed out like the flame of a candle. Proposition 1. Since war was declared many aeons ago in the heavenlies, Lucifer, the son of the morning, was thrust forth and literally cast out of the holy sphere along with millions of his angels, demons. Cast where? Cast down and into this planet Earth. Proposition 2. Holy books the world over record that since the dawning of that awesome morning, the planet Earth has been captive by Lucifer and his evil forces. He is, in fact, the prince of the powers of the air, the prince of darkness, and also the god of this world. Proposition 3. Lucifer is also the one who has polluted the atmosphere that you breathe. This condition is prevalent around this planet 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, thus creating a devastating effect on the human family since the very beginning of man's sojourn on this planet. And the situation is not growing any better. It is getting rapidly worse. Proposition 4. Every evil act that is committed on Earth today by members of the human race, as well as those of the animal kingdom, is attributable to the Luciferian effect. Satan's hold on this planet hangs heavily like a drape of doom. This also accounts for all of the ravages of crime, civil disorder, and general disharmony on Earth today. Proposition 5. Because of this condition, those from other planets are instructed to perform a ceremony called the Ring of Fire. This has been performed by a small number of people in Bible days. However, because of the threat brought to by certain high church officials, few people even know of the power of the Ring of Fire. Proposition 6. There is a formula by which all of you can benefit by the divine protection which is the result of the ceremony. Some of you may even take issue with the manner in which this power is invoked. But, this is immaterial. The name in which the invocation is pronounced may cause friction. But I will take this liberty of informing you of this great truth, because by ignoring it, you may lose your life. Proposition 7. The proof lies in the results. The formula has been time-tested. If those friends from space have invoked this divine protection before setting foot on this planet, can we be so complacent that we can afford to allow the evil forces on this planet to continue to rule our lives, plunge us into constant danger, plague us with an atmosphere until there is no more life left in us? Or, shall we maintain an open mind and accept the freedom and protection that has been provided? And now Proposition 8. Fire has always represented divine protection, cleansing and purification. The three Hebrew children of the Old Testament walked freely in the fiery furnace that was heated 7 times hotter than usual at the command of the evil king, because the three refused to bow down to his idol. They survived, accompanied by a fourth man who was also seen with them in the furnace. In this 20th century, far too many people are perishing before their time. UFO researchers are fast becoming the target for ungodly forces. Sickness and disease are running out of control in this generation. Governments are likewise deceiving the people into believing a great lie. In view of this, Do you or do you not need to be surrounded by the ring of fire? Please do the following. 1. In the privacy of your home, office, etc., place a lighted white candle before you on a table. 2. Do not permit anyone or anything to disturb you until you are completely finished with this ceremony. 3. Repeat the Lord's Prayer. 4. Pray the following proclamation without doubt in your heart. As you pray, believe that the God of creation is hearing you at the very moment that you are praying. Do not close your eyes, but look into the flame. Maintain your full senses and know what you are doing at all times. Then, repeat this proclamation aloud. Eternal Father, Creator of the universe, hear my petition. Surround me now, with your divine ring of fire. The fire of protection, the fire of your abundance, the fire of complete healing, and the fire of divine abundance. I command the hand of Almighty God on my behalf. Let it be so, this moment, in the blessed name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. Finally, extinguish the candle. Do not remove yourself from the room for at least 3 full minutes. Stand before the extinguished candle with your eyes open and feel the presence of the ring of fire. You will never be the same. Do this. Follow the instructions very carefully, and you will find actual changes taking place in your life. MIB in the Andes, introduced previously, global investigator Antonio Junius has come across only a handful of MIB-related cases, but he has no doubt about the authenticity of this report, which, he says, deserves more merit than some of the other cases he knows about. Traditionally, incidents of men in black, or MIBs, have been largely associated with the United States. This is not surprising, since both the story of Albert K. Bender, which started it all, and the book by the late Gray Barker, They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers, which popularized MIBs, originated in this country. However, a careful perusal of the foreign UFO literature will produce a few significant MIB incidents anywhere from mainland China to the high Andes of Peru. A case that took place in 1975 in the town of Sicuani, not far from the famous city of Cuzco in Peru, is of particular interest, since it contains the basic theme of MIB harassment of a UFO witness in an attempt to confiscate important evidence in his possession, in this case a photograph of 3 flying saucers over the village of Capilani taken by a reporter from Lima. The case is also important because both the photographer and the investigator, Cuzco ufologist Anton Ponce de Leon, were probably unaware of the rich American literature in this subject. Ponce de Leon, for instance, doesn't speak English at all. Thus, the case is likely uncontaminated by previous accounts, something which sociologists and folklorists studying this or other similar phenomena consider of great importance. The incident has never been published in English as well until this book. Anton Ponce de Leon is an anthropologist, ufologist, author and social worker from Cuzco, the ancient capital of the Incas, who studied at Cuzco University and the National University of La Plata in Argentina. He was the regional director in Cuzco of the pioneer UFO group IPRI, the Peruvian Institute of Interplanetary Relations, founded in the 1950s by Carlos Paz Garcia in Lima, and has therefore documented many interesting UFO cases in the area of Cuzco and Urubamba, the sacred valley of the Incas. Some of his works and ideas were featured in Shirley MacLaine's 3rd metaphysical book, It's All in the Playing, which describes her adventures in Peru at the time of the filming of the TV miniseries of her bestseller, Out on a Limb. I met Senor Ponce de Leon during his visit to New York City in 1988, where he lectured in Queens about UFO sightings in Peru and Inca cosmology. He was also drawing support for his latest cause, Samanewasi, the House of Rest, a retreat he built in Cuzco for the care of abandoned children and elders. At his well-documented lecture in Spanish, Senor Ponce described many interesting UFO sightings and close encounters in the Cuzco region which he had personally investigated during the late 70s. These included landing cases with traces of radioactivity, incidents where car engines were stopped, and even a fascinating account of a truck driver who was apparently healed of cancer of the stomach by a light beam from a UFO. The incident that concerns us here, however, is the MIB story from Sicuani, a town located south of Cuzco. As told by Ponce de Leon, in the year of 1975 there was much talk about UFO sightings in Sicuani, particularly at night, and the peasants were talking about something very worrisome to them, that they were hearing noises under the ground as if machines were working there, according to their expression. Ponce went to Sicuani to investigate the flap, which had also spread to the Indian villages of Capilani and Chumo in the high Andes, and met in Sicuani a reporter from the newspaper Ultima Hora of Lima, who was looking for him for an interview and background information on the UFO flap. The reporter traveled to Capilani the next morning, where he saw and took a very clear photograph of three craft crossing behind the tower of the chapel, explained Ponce. The reporter returned very enthusiastic to Sicuani with his photo and left the roll of film with a photographer friend to be developed, because he wanted to return and take more photos. This is the moment where mysterious and so far unidentified MIBs entered the scene. As put by Ponce in his lecture, when the man returned to his hotel, in Sicuani, he found that his room was all messed up. He inquired with the concierge, who told him that two gentlemen in black and with hats had come saying that they were friends of yours. As they told me that they were looking for you, I let them enter your room because they were going to wait for you there. Now, I don't know from where they left the hotel. That was just the beginning of a cat and mouse game that went on for several days. When the reporter went to check the photos with his friend, he discovered that the men in black had visited the photographer and requested the negatives, saying that the reporter wasn't able to come and had asked them to pick up the photos, continued Ponce. Fortunately, the photographer, who knew that the shot of Capilani was very important, thought that there was something wrong with the story and told the MIBs that the reporter had already been there to pick up the photos. The harassment went on, according to Ponce de Leon, and the reporter was becoming very worried. He would leave some papers and the papers would disappear. He would return to his hotel and his room had been inspected again. He changed hotels but the problem continued. Finally, added Ponce, he grabbed a taxi and came to Cuzco very frightened. He visited me in Cuzco, where I personally studied the negatives and I have no doubt that they are authentic. As he was extremely frightened, he took the first plane back to Lima and left the negatives with me. I sent them by mail and a few days later the story was published in the newspaper Ultima Hora. Thus, the MIBs were thwarted in this particular case, although I have not yet located a copy of the photograph of the three saucers over the skies of Capilani. Indeed, I have never even seen a reference to this photo in the three-volume UFO picture book by Spanish writer J.J. Benitez or the book, Los OVNIL Evidencia Fotografica by Argentinian ufologist Guillermo Roncaroni, both of which contain numerous UFO photos from South America. So it is possible that the MIBs may have succeeded after all in stealing the negatives from the editorial offices of Ultima Hora in Lima. Who knows? UFO contactee Howard Menger, INSET, says he was paid a visit by mysterious agents following his taking of photos and movies of UFO and space aliens landing in his High Bridge, New Jersey backyard. The Incredible Men in Black summer of 1968, with over 15 million books in print, best-selling author Brad Steiger is well aware of the MIB phenomena, having been confronted with evidence for several decades that the MIB are not the product of overworked imaginations. Here is what his research shows. The unpleasant phenomenon known as the Men in Black, the MIB, appears to be an ongoing program of harassment conducted by an agency that remains unknown and unidentified, although nearly every research in ufology has nominated his most likely candidate for the men behind the mask. I have dealt with the MIB and the more sinister aspects of UFO research in such books as Mysteries of Time and Space and the newly released The Philadelphia Experiment and other UFO conspiracies. I tend to believe that we are dealing with an enigma that has both a physical and a paraphysical reality, and I will refer the reader to either of the two above mentioned works for a more complete examination of my theories. for this present work, I would like to recall the summer of 1968, a time that was maddeningly busy with significant MIB activity. On the morning of Saturday, June 14, 1968, a man representing himself as an Air Force major contacted Thomas Wedemeyer, security chief of the Commission on Aerial Phenomena, CAP, Jamestown, New York. The officer presented papers identifying himself as Major Smedley, an Air Force investigator operating out of Jamestown. Major Smedley questioned Wedemeyer about James Noreen, the director of CAP. He demanded to know who headed investigations for the organization, and was particularly interested in any information which CAP might have acquired regarding a report made by two state police officers concerning a UFO that had landed outside of Buffalo, New York, on June 12. Major Smedley was not driving an automobile and did not carry an attaché case. He was wearing an Air Force uniform. Wedemeyer remembers being intrigued by the peculiar accent with which the visitor spoke. After the major left, Wedemeyer suffered from an acute headache and could remember nothing of their conversation, for about 5 minutes. Later, a CAP check of the local Air Force authorities revealed that there was no Major Smedley working out of Jamestown. Upon receiving this information, CAP Director Noreen wrote to me, "We immediately checked with Air Force personnel, via teletype, in Boston, Massachusetts." The reply was most interesting. The Air Force lists no Major Smedley on their records. In other words, such a man is not a member of the United States Air Force. The fact that this person, whoever he might have been, seemed worried that our organization might have pertinent information concerning the reported landing outside of Buffalo prompted us to further our investigation of this incident. On August 10, the officers of the CAP were visited by freelance UFO investigators from Erie, Pennsylvania. In the course of conversation, the visitors told Noreen and his staff about a strange incident that had occurred to an associate of theirs. In the summer of 1967, the Pennsylvania UFO investigator had been contacted by an Air Force officer, who wished to question him regarding his research. The officer had been alone, on foot and carried no briefcase. He had interrogated the researcher for an hour. After the Air Force officer had left, the UFO researcher became violently ill and had to be confined to his bed for 2 weeks. The Air Force OISA TMS name, Major Smedley. The descriptions of the MIB range from the common short men, dark complexions, oriental features, heavy accents to tall, blonde, crew-cut, fair-complexioned, Scandinavian types. Sometimes they appear as odd couples, a tall blonde with a short, dark companion, spreading confusion and discouraging research. In the summer of 1968, one received a long-distance telephone call from a journalist friend who was covering a UFO flap area for his local newspaper. "Blast Brad Stager and Joan Rittner and down with John Keel," he thundered. Recognizing my friend at TMS voice, I asked him what the trouble was. "I'm trying to cover this flap over here, my lord. Everyone has seen these UFOs. But every time I try to dig deep," the witness clams up and says, "I won't say any more. Brad Stager says awful things will happen to me if I tell too much. One lady said that John Keel had told her that she would be carried off by the saucer people if she talked to anyone about her sighting. I knew that neither Keel nor I were in that particular flap area at that time, and that neither of us would say such things in even a jesting manner if we had been in the locale, so I pressed my friend for details. Well, damn near everywhere I go, the witness has been given a copy of one of the Stager written a books or a magazine with an article in it by you or Keel. And the books and articles are supposed to frighten them." I questioned, "Whoever is delivering these things must be adding their own interpretation." "I don't know about that, but what the hell are you people saying in these articles?" the frustrated newsman wanted to know. "Haven't you read them?" I countered. "I don't need to read them," the journalist roared. "Every UFO witness I interview is waving a copy in my face and telling me about all the terrible things that will happen to him if he elaborates on his sighting report. But who are the delivery boys?" I asked. Have you seen them? Not until this afternoon, the newsman answered. I guess I must have arrived at this farmhouse just a few minutes after they did. Damn unfriendly little monkeys. Could you describe them? Well, I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to them. I just shot an irritated glance at them every once in a while.